You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm honored and thrilled to have Carmen Bolter return to do her fourth show. Dr. Bolter is a professor at the University of Calgary in Canada who has just recently completed her 25th trip to Egypt. Since 1995, Carmen has been leading sacred site journeys to Egypt, the Mediterranean, Peru, and Tibet. She has traveled to 51 countries exploring ancient mysteries. Her new two DVD set, The Pyramid Code, is a magnificent revelation and in-depth exploration of little-known secrets of Egypt in five complete programs. Documentary channel rightly named The Pyramid Code the top documentary of 2010. And I highly recommend that everyone go out and get a copy of this. It's magnificent. She is also the author of Angels and Archetypes, a multidimensional map of spirituality and goddess mythology. Both can be found on her site at www.pyramidcode.com. So let's welcome her back to the show now. Hi, Carmen. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, Lance. Nice to be back.
Oh, good. Good to have you, too. Well, a lot has happened since we last spoke, huh?
Yeah, things are really accelerating, that's for sure.
I thought that because it's probably on everybody's mind, I thought we could put this one to bed and just kind of get a snapshot of your gut feeling about what's going on in Egypt.
Well, first of all, when we were last there, and you were quite right that it was my 25th trip, I noticed that the Egyptian people were distraught and distracted. Lots of phone calls back and forth, and the people that were with us on the tour seemed to be unable to focus. And I had great concern about that, and I termed it systemic stress, which I think everyone around the world is feeling. The system is just breaking everybody down, and we're all tired of it. And so that can be high food prices and whatever. So when this thing broke out in Egypt a few weeks later, I instantly thought, well, that's it. Now, the good news is that Facebook and Twitter helped them connect. And the bad news is that internet went down in a few nanoseconds. And I had been concerned for several months about the internet kill switch that Obama had been trying to pass legislation to have, that, you know, now that everybody's all hooked on YouTube, I've been on internet since 1982, but it took a good long time for everybody to get on and have YouTube in every conversation. Now that everybody's hooked on it, it's threatened. And so I think that this is making quite a commentary on the social networking system, A. B, it's a fact that Mubarak has $72 billion amassed, and the average family living on $720 a month, a year, sorry, $2
a
day,
right?
$720 a year,
yeah.
And that's $10,000 for every man, woman, and child, which would be $50,000 for every average family. Well, that would go a long way to healing infrastructure and changing the whole system and giving everybody in Egypt a leg up. Now, everybody was calling me, and I only watched CNN one day because I know that the CNN mentality is the only place you're safe is on your own couch, so I tend to avoid it. And so I put it on, but when people would phone me, I'd turn it off. I turn the volume off, and I'm like, oh, look at those people. They look like they're standing, you know, at a market, and they, oh, look, they've got their children with them. Oh, that's in front of the Ministry of Information. They call it the Radio and Television Building because I had to go in there to get my permits for the Pyramid Code. And I saw people being quite civilized and relaxed, and if it was all violent, you wouldn't bring your kids. And then I turned the volume back up, and they're going, violence, violence, violence. I thought, well, they're just spinning this. They've gone radio silent. So they can say whatever they want,
yeah,
the things that leak through. So All of that being said, the people were very brave, and they were laughing and singing and dancing, and they were around Tahrir Square, so when they prayed, you could see the side of the museum. But when they started talking about the looting, I know the museum really well. I thought, those artifacts weren't from the museum, and those cases don't look familiar. And the people, that wouldn't be the people's agenda. Mm-hmm. When they said that the police were gone, I thought, well, they went home and took their uniforms off and came back because the military and the police are the Egyptian people. And so this was not, you know, the military upholding Mubarak. I think everybody's really was really tired of being silenced. And I really think that the mainstream media was putting a spin on everything and saying, you know, talking about looting and violence, and they had a picture of a guy throwing a police shield down the street with nobody there. And they kept repeating it and repeating it and repeating it because they didn't have pictures of violence. And then put the soundtrack on, and it did not match the pictures. So I saw right through it, and then they started saying, oh, no, it wasn't really looted. And then they were saying that they'd gone in and taken a mummy out of the case. Well, they couldn't get it out. These things are temperature-controlled, big glass. And, yeah. And if you got it out, the thing when they were showing the head was from a skeleton, and it was a mummy. And I'm like, how stupid do they think we are? But they do this all the time where they say mummy, mummy, when it's a skeleton in a fetal position instead of the royal posture of the pharaohs and and the queens. So spin, okay, spin. And when we look at the dominoes falling all around the Middle East, you know, who knows anything anymore about who's doing what the propaganda is, what the underlying currents are. What we do know is that we're getting dangerously close to the eye of the needle of going through the, whatever you're going to call it, the portal at 2012. We're in the corridor. Time is speeding up. And it's almost like most people are just going to free fall to go through, you know, to the other side, which is hopefully the beginning of a new era. And so it's very difficult to say. I feel uncomfortable, you know, making any definitive statements because if Egypt went radio silent, you know, then we don't know what really happened. And so I think it's arrogant to think that we do, A. B, I've been in close touch with friends over there for 15 years, and I haven't spoken to them yet. And I tried to call on the first day without realizing what had started, and of course the lines were down. Then they put the cell phones back on, but you couldn't upload YouTube videos. So everything has been very controlled. And my next and final point about this is that no matter what fell, we don't really have a model for an empowered humanity. All we have is more of the same, the monetary system that leads to hyperinflation, poverty being a form of terrorism, you know, denying people their rights. What we have, we call democracy, but it's really a one-party system disguised as a two-party system. So the distance between what could happen in North America and what was happening in Egypt was made out to be like, oh, way over there they're having these problems in the Middle East, but over here we're so great and safe. Yeah. But I didn't see it that way. I think that anything could change really quickly on the whole planet, and we're not exactly prepared with a new model or with the openness to be able to start with a people-powered, grassroots, bottom-up system that empowers humanity.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and of course, the media is all pretty much sewn up and controlled, so we now know that they lie, spin, and make up stuff that is absolutely untrue. So you can't really get your information from the mainstream media, but what I'm concerned about, and I think you might be also, is that when the dominoes fall, and it may seem like a far distance to us, but it's just a nanoparticle away from happening here and everywhere around the globe, that people won't have the appropriate information to understand how to decode what's happening. And so the whole the point of that is that they'll be thrown into an instant reaction based upon fear and misinformation.
Well, and those of us that have had our ear to the ground for years and decades, even though we know and we can see through what they're doing, I'm not sure how much that helps us. in this situation. Now, a few of the things that have been said is that the whole world's going to fall apart. We need to start living like we will when it's coming back together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much at stake here, and yet, by the same token, maybe everything we've got in our society has been built on false premises. And we really, really need a complete physical, emotional, spiritual, psychic, cosmic transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the seeds of the right kind of transformation will be found in how the ancients lived and their value system and their principles. However,
mm-hmm.
we've been living in a patriarchal era, and I think that's what's demarcated by the Mayan calendar, 3113 BC to 2012. Now, 3113 BC coincides with the first dynasty in Egypt. And so that was the beginning of the patriarchal downfall of Egypt, and that's all we're really given about what Egypt was about. It was a little bit of pre-dynastic, few ropes and a bird goddess here and there. But the patriarchy's agenda has been to erase evidence of everything other than itself. So we have very weak ties in terms of a cultural mythology back to anything that's sane, that worked, that gave more to the children and honored elders, and we lived in harmlessness and, you know, in harmony with the planet, interactive with Gaia Sophia. Like, that's something that used to happen that's recorded in the Nag Hammadi texts that were completely bastardized in terms of their translation that took 21 years because
mm-hmm.
they were translated by non-mystics. Now,
yeah.
the Nag Hammadi texts are connected to the Temple of Dendera and the goddess-centered cultures, and anyway, they basically hold a sense of sanity of how we can live. So it's a very interesting failed experiment. And now we're left at the end with a huge mess, and we're waiting for a miracle.
Yes, and of course, as you know, many people are living in a savior mentality because that's what they've been programmed to do.
Well, everything that we've been programmed is false. The cultural
yes.
myth of an old man with a lightning bolt that's going to strike you down that you have to have faith in, and the least conscious, greediest, most corrupt criminal people running the countries, and essentially half the wealth of the world being in the hands of 300 families, if you will, but usually one person is the head of the family, basically boils down to the heads of state and the Illuminati and the rest of us are paying for our own enslavement. And that's not a secret anymore. Well, that basically means that the people have no power. And you can call it whatever you want. It's been deteriorating and deteriorating, but the people are also disempowered. So if we were living on principle morally, then we wouldn't need a policeman to tell us we need a bicycle helmet. We would put it on because we want to protect our head and there's a helmet. But everything, we're over-socialized, over-taxed, over-governed, and toxified to the point where it's got to change.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it will change, but it's not going to be pretty. I think if you believe anything that you've been told, there's going to be some pretty shocking news coming along.
And very soon, too. We're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from 2012. And as you mentioned in your CDs, one of the things I like about them is that you tie so many things together: the ancient mythologies and the Mayan calendar and the goddess cultures and so on and so forth. It's you know, a never-ending education. But the Mayan culture, the ninth wave's coming up on March 9th. If you follow that, so. That could be an additional acceleration.
Oh, absolutely. But beyond question, if you look at Talamon's work,
yeah.
the way the pyramidal structure is constructing the Mayan calendar, what used to take 100,000 years and then 10,000 years and then 1,000 and then, you know, 1 year is now going to turn around every 20 days. And
yeah.
so we
yeah.
are ratcheting through an acceleration, and basically we are living at the tip of a tornado.
Yeah.
And there's maybe an eye in the middle of it that's quiet, but the bottom of it is hard as a diamond that can drill through anything.
Yeah.
And so it's accelerating. Some people say, oh, it just feels like time's going faster because we're older. Well, that
no.
too. But there is an exponential time warp going on. I think we blinked and it was New Year's a minute ago. Yeah. And we're heading into March like any second here. So we are in an acceleration. There's no time to think anymore. There's no time to react. It's just upon us. Every time you go to the grocery store, it's a fact. Things cost more every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, you know, then they want to they want to tax us some more, and then they, you know, rob from the public, you know, it goes on and on and on. And so you and I have had many conversations, and I think that we work hard to not upset ourselves further with what's going on. And I've been subscribing to the 80-20 rule, where we talk about solutions 80% of the time, and mental preparedness as opposed to all the different things that are wrong with the system.
Right. Well, one of the things that I've noticed for myself is that by detaching from I call it the matrix, the materialistic side of the 3D nature of things, and being content with what I have, whatever that is, then what I have is sufficient. So one of the things that seems to create so much suffering for people is that they don't have enough. And, of course, that's an illusion. And that can be carried to such extremes that, you know, you end up with 300 families owning three-quarters of the world, you know, with trillions of dollars to throw away, and people starving and dying and being killed off intentionally for the most part. So living within our means and learning how to be with one another and be with ourselves is an important part of that process, yes?
Well, sure, and that would be the discipline of any kind of meditation or whatever. But if you look in Egypt, one of the things that I've always marveled at is the Egyptian people themselves. They are irrepressible, they're polite, they're generous, they wear their hearts on their sleeves, they're always smiling, they're rhythmic, and they've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
feed a family and buy shoes and school books on $2 a day,
mm-hmm.
and we have everything, and we're looking for what's wrong and what the next thing is, and our thing isn't about getting something, it's about wanting something.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute we get it, the game's over, and then what's the next thing to want?
Yep.
Well, there can come a point where there's nothing left to want, and that game is just never ending, as is greed and power and, you know, the wealthy wanting more and more money. How much more power if they control the media and they control everything and they control, it goes on and on, and then they have more and more money and then they can buy more power. That's also not satisfying. They need more and more power and more wealth and more control. Well, the sickest people are running it, and, you know, the people who have the least are the healthiest. So we've got it. It's just so topsy-turvy and backwards, and it's a hall of mirrors, and we're just about to go through this vortex where, you know, it's all going to change. Well, I agree with the idea that as we pass through this 26,000-year cycle and a 5,000 and a 2,000, all these different cycles are converging at a zero point, that the energetics are going to change. And so in the stage that we're in now, anything that's not balanced between masculine and feminine, that's supporting patriarchal ways of being and thinking, actually energetically cannot hold. But as long as the collective unconscious thinks, oh, yeah, that's the way things are, then it gives energy because thought is creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so many psychic predictions were quite accurate until we hit 1999 and even Nostradamus started to get a little weaker there. But most psychics cannot perceive beyond 2012, nor remote viewers, because we're entering into a co-creative phase and nothing is written in stone. Nothing is anything unless we co-create it, which is why we can't afford the luxury of a single negative thought. We've got to create the world. What would make us happy? What would make it work? But we also have to be careful that we're not using the secret, if you will, that says, oh, I want a red Ferrari. But the thing is, it's not about what we, little us, want in terms of entertaining ourselves. It's about what supports us to help the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're provided with if it supports the greater good. It's not about little us.
Right.
And everything that's happened on the planet, education, religion, all of that has made it look like it's all about serving our ego. And many, many, many people don't understand that. And you can even get people who have ego about not having ego, you know, right. And the whole need now to cut through spiritual materialism.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, like we can turn anything into a taking game.
Yeah,
and you're coming from your ego if you're taking and if you're needy. And you're coming from your soul if you're invested in helping everyone. And the bodhisattva concept is, if you know, we're not free unless everyone's free. It's not about, oh, I'm going to be free and I've got food and I'm going to shoot you. If you need food and it's mine, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make any sense to someone who is truly a Gnostic at the cellular level, who remembers living in harmony. And it's so fascinating to me that the patriarchy has gone to such lengths to disband, lose, deny, demonize anything that makes sense, and has fed us violence and given us guns. The only purpose for a gun is to shoot an animal or a person. No one should shoot anybody, ever.
That's right. That's right.
You know, if you can chase after something and you need to eat and you can get it with a spear, all the power to you, and they, you know, do prayers and eat that way. You know, so the way the Indians lived was quite simple, but they had access to cosmic rays and things that transform DNA and evolution. And one of the things that I just realized in the last little while here as I'm renovating a suite is that PVC plastic is one of the things that cosmic radiation, cosmic energy that evolves our DNA, cannot penetrate. So in the winter months, all of our houses are in these plastic bags, and we stay inside because it's cold, and we play our computer games or whatever, and we can't really evolve without exposing ourselves to what exists naturally with the sun in Mother Nature. And they say, oh, no, avoid the sun because it's going to give you cancer and all that stuff. But it's fascinating to me how thorough the system has disempowered us bit by bit and dumbed us down. It's absolutely incredible how it's happened. And so it's like, you know, lifting the veil in The Wizard of Oz and seeing what was running the whole thing. So the mythology is there, and many, many, many people know the difference between right and wrong in their gut.
Yeah.
And things trigger them. And humanity is in good shape. It's the suppression that is keeping humanity from rising up. And having been to 52 countries, Egypt counts as one, going there 25 times, and the list goes on. The people of the world are kind, generous, loving. Everybody wants love and support. Everybody respects your children if they have children, and even if they don't. And so it's so incredible that such a few people could do so much damage.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And it seems that we, in order to be released from that, we would need to, you know, empower ourselves, but also somehow that influence or that negative force needs to be removed.
And it would be quite simple if the willingness was there.
Yeah.
And we need a new model for how to run things. And the monetary system has to fall. Wall Street is just, you know, self-serving people getting money from the people. Whoops, we lost it. Sorry. Oh, we're richer. Huh? You know, it's like it's not just about us empowering ourselves, because as long as we get huge utility bills, we have free energy. We shouldn't be paying anybody for that.
Right.
You know, we pay insurance, and then when it's time to collect, they go, oh, no, you know, precondition, whatever. Oh, no, we don't, you know, your house, no, house insurance is only for the big stuff. Oh, no, well, everybody's got a big stuff now, so we can't pay, you know. And so interest is all phony money, and people paying, you know, themselves out of phony money.
Oh,
we end up paying for our houses three times, and the last is taxes. Income tax is unconstitutional. They pay themselves, and I don't want my hard-earned money to go into paying for a limousine for a guy, you know, who's a politician who's completely disconnected. Now, if you think about who ran society, who was the leader in the ancient matriarchal societies and in ancient Egypt, it was the most conscious, smartest, most fit, most conscious person was the leader, and they didn't get anything. It was completely immoral for them to get any profit for themselves by leading.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was trained in leadership. because it was not expected for any one person to have the monopoly on that. And they got their robe and their lunch. Well, here, most politicians go in with a certain net worth, and they come out with, you know, infinitesimally higher net worth.
Yes.
What's that about? That's not leadership. That's control and greed.
Yep.
There's a big difference.
Well, people have to wake up and see that. You mentioned the priest, the matriarchy. Did I see somewhere that there were 9 levels of initiation within the priesthood?
Well, priestess, you see, when they say priesthood, again, that's patriarchal, because
that's
way
man.
Back, you know, in the matriarchal cultures, it was about balance. The priestesses there were periods of time where mostly it was priestesses, but in the ancient Egyptian culture, yes, there were 9 levels of initiation, and it was all about discipline and proper diet and exercise and all that would allow greater capacity for the energetics of the cosmos to come through. Our bodies, and we could get electromagneticuted if we were exposed to too much of this powerful energy if we didn't know how to stand. And so that's what the bands were around the wrists and the ankles, to allow for more energy to come through. And then the bands around the upper arms were about being trained in sex magic, which was taking the feminine principle and the masculine principle and putting them together for a higher purpose, to build a charge. But when it came time to the 9th level of initiation, didn't matter what a single initiate did or a group of initiates did, they couldn't raise their level. It's almost like plugging a plug into the power source.
Oh.
So it was the high priestess that would elevate the initiate. Now, they had to be able to cope with that, or else they would die. Literally, they would just, you know, have too much energy moving through them. So there was this very sophisticated pattern of training to make sure that everybody survived the thing, and that people didn't get initiated unless they were ready and that they could handle the energy. But after they got lifted, literally, through somebody who had more energy, one by one, into this 9th level, they instantly became telepathic. They could control the temple, the huge cougars, the temple cats, panthers, with their third eye. And the transmutation of the atom, all the things that had to do with free energy, anti-gravity, teleportation, manifestation, bilocation, alchemy, all of that was all the same thing, because it meant that the atom could transmute. And we don't understand that. We've erased that. We've dumbed that down. However, we do have access to those technologies, and it seems once you get into one, then the others are within the same realm, and that's been suppressed. But it's not to say that there weren't commoners that weren't high-level initiates in the time, but there was a certain sect of people that dedicated their entire life to helping humanity run these energetic grids, and the purpose of being at the 9th level was to participate as human divining rods in the whole grid system around the Earth, the telluric currents, where you see sacred sites and pyramids and that sort of thing all over the globe. So there was something that was able to sustain and nourish humanity on a larger level in a positive sense. And all that's been, you know, broken down, except it's so powerful that if you go to Stonehenge or Newgrange or the pyramids and Easter Island, the energy is still flowing through these stones.
I like the way that your video demonstrates the way that the rise and fall of civilizations ties into the various ages. And that we're in the least conscious age, the densest age right now, which is, I guess, the Iron?
Yep, the Iron Age, the Kali Yuga, as they say in the Vedic traditions of ancient East India. We are at the darkest of the dark, and the irony is the Darwinian delusion and the myth of progress. Oh, we're so smart, we're technologically advanced, we've been so advanced. No one could ever be smarter than us. When we're living in a bloodbath, it's absolutely we're just like completely harmed by electrostatic grids and all that, and we're violent and, you know, disconnected and not spiritual, and it's the darkest, darkest, darkest point. And I think that from a golden age, we had future vision and we could see what it was going to come to, and we tried to leave ourselves clues.
Yes. And a lot, and many of us, and such as yourself, are helping to decode these clues for us so that we can begin to reawaken to who we are and our own power. And
well,
don't you think that there's an awakening going on?
Well, there is, but I'm thinking like it's nearly too late. You know, like in the 70s, you know, nuts and berries and yogurt was weird and yoga was weird and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we've come a long way, and I guess I feel like, you know, it's almost like the free fall now. There's not a lot of time to get organized anymore and to get to the new levels of spirituality. And I know that over the last period of time, if people started doing yoga or learning to channel, they'd go click, 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 and they do really well with it. And I think that people who are interested in that sort of thing probably did it in another incarnation, and, you know, they remember something, so they have an orientation to it. And so many people have moved forward. However, the amount of systemic stress, if you're broke, like Abraham Maslow, years and years ago in early psychology days, talked about food, clothing, and shelter. If you don't have your basic needs met, if your utility bills aren't paid, your taxes aren't paid, it starts to wear at you. And it's pretty hard to be spiritual and have a quiet meditation when you think somebody's coming after you.
Absolutely.
Or the phone rings every 10 minutes because somebody's looking for money. We need our basic needs met, and that is kind of eroding on the other side. There's a lot of people who can't afford housing, you know, et cetera. And if you've been affording food, and every time you go to the grocery store it's more, well, it's not going to take very long before a lot of people, you know, are eating differently, and then that lowers your consciousness if you're not eating organic, healthy food and all that. And so how can, you know, like, it's just, we're really at an interesting crossroads, and so it's almost like we need to be as pure as we can and as quiet as we can and ride it through. Like, I don't know that, you know, I guess that's not particularly optimistic, and I do pride myself on staying optimistic, but I think that we need to just ride it now.
I tend to agree with you on that one. I used to do a radio show with somebody who said that we had passed a tipping point, I think it was about 10 or 15 years ago, as far as an ability to turn things around. That people said, would kept bringing this up. Well, we can turn this around. We can change. And the person said, "Well, who is going to agree on anything, and who's going to implement it? You know, there's an opinion. Each person has an opinion, and we're not working together as a unity to assist each other, which is just helping ourselves. So until this unity wave, if it is as potent as we Carl seems to think it is, it may unlock the keys to our being able to get out of ourselves and expand our consciousness to the point where we can understand some of these things and move forward.
Yes, and anybody can say anything. Like, Internet's really helping us, and Internet radio has done a tremendous service to people, and I really listen to a lot of, you know, people talking, and I pick and choose who I'm listening to. But if you listen carefully and listen more than once, you'll hear a lot of contradiction of what people think is going to happen. And I think that we're really at an interesting crossroads, and it's more important, instead of being prescriptive about what we should do next,
right,
and a new
right.
list of rules,
right.
that we come up with some principles that if anything involves harming anybody else or
right.
overpowering anybody or dominating them, it's
yep.
not part of the new way.
Right.
And
Absolutely.
There's an awful lot of people that I think live that way, but they get confused. Like, I had lots of people arguing with me. Well, no, they said they were looting at the museum. And I'm like, well, I'm sure they weren't. And then later, if you dig, you find they apologize and it wasn't really true. Well, meanwhile, who was looting all the artifacts out of there? It was the officials.
Right.
How did
right.
they get so rich?
Well, Mubarak got $75 billion from somewhere. A big chunk of that probably came from the United States.
Yep.
You know, and I doubt if that funneled down too much lower than him. I mean, we know how these things work. We put those people in place, we set them up, and we basically pay them off.
Well, and there's a lot of artifacts that mysteriously have disappeared.
Yes.
And now they don't let you take pictures anymore in the National Museum because you can date and timestamp them and see what went where. And things have been shuffled around, and whole rooms are closing, and containerfuls of artifacts, supposedly replicas, have been shipped anywhere in the world, and I'm telling you, there is an awful lot of Egyptian stuff in private collections, and they have been getting richer and richer, and Egypt is emptying out of a lot of these things and tracing what's happened, because I spent a lot of time in the National Museum, and I've done a lot of photo shoots in there, and now it's almost impossible to do that. Mm-hmm. And there is definitely some monkey business going on there, and there's and they print it in the newspaper. So if you've had your ear to the ground for a lot of years in Egyptian newspapers as well as things here, and whistleblowers who are part of the system, and you know, interviews that are in Arabic that are translated, it's right there coming into my computer.
Wow. You mentioned something interesting that I thought maybe you might want to elaborate on a little bit, and that is the amount of information is contradictory out there. And I find the same thing myself, that even on the sources that I go to for information, excuse me, I find there is a multitude of a different. There are many different perspectives on things, and it's gotten to the point where I don't really believe anything anymore, and I just kind of lean back and wait until the air clears, and usually something comes up that leans in one direction or another. How you're an academic, and you know how to learn, how to teach people to research. How can we learn how to discern and research and verify?
Okay, that's an excellent question, and it's a big question. Now, first of all, I had a saying for a long time: you don't have to believe it. Either it's a fact or it isn't, and you get it with your deep knowing. Now, we don't cultivate knowing in school. We cultivate hoop, jump, biscuit, give the answer back that the teacher wants, which is not necessarily connected to the truth. It's connected to the propaganda or the test.
Yeah.
And so we've all learned how to pass tests, but we haven't learned to cultivate our deep knowing. That's one.
Okay.
The other thing is that quantitative research methods is very rigorous, and a lot of people make fun of the rigor of academia, but they don't understand it, and a lot of people are afraid of statistics and call them sadistics, and they're taught in a very dry manner.
Yeah.
But the point is that there's two kinds of research. One's qualitative research and one's quantitative research, and qualitative is basically looking at smaller groups, just making observations, what you see in a few people. And let's say in an educational setting, you interview five students, their parents, the teachers, and the principal. And then you'd put together, I see some similarities here, and then you come up with a theory on why that happened. That's a whole form of research. It's called qualitative. On the other hand, quantitative is you come up with a hypothesis first. You have a hunch about something. Mm-hmm. Then you get groups that you have, a control group, a partial treatment group, and a treatment group, and you do something, so you run a test or put people in the pyramid or whatever, you get a baseline. You have groups of hundreds of people. A sample size can be no less than 30 people, and that even that is like the bottom line weakest. And then you run these tests, and you try to come up with correlations, and you put it through logarithms on the computer to come up with what influences what. And then you say, I was wrong. I hypothesized, I was right. But you have strength of probability. But a weak but significant probability is a chance of 95 in 100.
Hmm.
Okay? A moderate probability is 99 in 100. And a strong probability is 1 in 1,000.
Hmm.
So if you take, you know, five things of water and play five different kinds of music to it and say, look, this is registering, you know, dark anger, and this is registering this, or you have a whole bunch of water and you say, look, all these ones, three of them came up as anger. No. In order to have a weak but significant probability, you have to play music in 100 different things of water in different situations and have it come up 95 times before you have significance. So when people are, they're not academic and they say data shows, usually people have a hunch. They find one person who had a study that said something, and they went, they agree, so I'm right. And then they call it proof. But if you've got a PhD, you can't use that word, and you have to say, looks like, seems like, from the data, what we have now, it shows, but we don't know what we're going to have in 20 years and what's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call it hedging. You know, but it's for sure likely, it seems, you know, like you're still puffing yourself up while you're using hedging words. And so a lot of people have not done their own research, and they are basically what we do, what we call a literature review. He said, she said, which is good. But you've got to also say, how many people, in what situation did you run the test? Because research has to be replicatable. So if you run a study, I need to be able to go and see exactly what your methodology is, and I could take the same sort of thing, the same tests you use, the same everything, and I likely would get the same results, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is reliability. And validity is, you know, like, are you really measuring what you think you're measuring? Or is it hearsay? So people like Zachariah Sitchin, you know, he could read cuneiform text. But a linguist will tell you, if you make one mistake on a preposition, something is in or something is at, or even he, she, you can completely change something with the slightest little fragment. But somebody, we can't get access to the Sumerian text a lot of times. My PhD happens to be in linguistics, but you can't get access to these materials, and so we repeat what somebody said as if it's true. But we don't know if everybody can't check his research. And so what I see is the wholesaling of these ideas that just get pushed down the scene, and everybody's like, yep, yep, he said. And I also hear people who have seen the Pyramid Code, you know, I know that they saw it because of how they're mentioning it, but they're not repeating it back exactly because they didn't really understand it, right? But they take
That's
it as
right.
fact. And so it's very, very important to look at how research is being done. And it's difficult because you have to have, you know, grants and Lord knows, to be able to get permits to do anything in Egypt, and it's going to be even harder now. Almost nobody gets to do field work there. Almost nobody gets to take pictures, no matter what. They don't even want you taking pictures on the street.
Wow.
So there's a lot, you know, like the fact that the Pyramid Code even got made and got to say some different controversial kinds of things and show a lot of reasons that you can see with your own eyes. And in the Pyramid Code, there's an indigenous wisdom keeper called Hakim. And my mandate was to find scientific support for what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But he says it's not fair to deny what you can see and touch with your own hands. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a crystalline matrix and you're looking at an instrument and it's got characteristics, you can, and it's polished and it's, you know, laser cut, you cannot say that was made with a chisel.
Right.
Because you couldn't make it with a chisel, nor could anybody else.
Right.
So that's the sort of rigor that can help us when we're listening to various people discern. And so, you know, I listen anyway, but I'm twitching and getting uncomfortable and, you know, every once in a while shouting out, wait a minute, because people can join, and be okay, and then jump to a conclusion. And somebody who's not astute looking at how this is done doesn't know which part, but they feel uncomfortable, but they don't know which part was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely right. You mentioned Hakim, and in the videos, which have five sections to them, he is interwoven beautifully, and the videos are done, I mean, it really is a work of art. I was watching episode 4 and 5 last night, and I was just transfixed by the level of quality and the beauty of it. But Hakim is no longer with us, and he really is, or was, one of the top indigenous wisdom keepers for the pyramids. He grew up in them, I believe, on those sands. Is there anything that he shared with you that you would find of interest to the listeners tonight?
That's interesting, because he was very definitely my mentor for 10 years. And another motivation of the Pyramid Code was to capture his work and support it in some way before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were in post-production, bringing down, you know, editing the work and bringing him into the timeline, he passed, and he came to me right away. But he used to say things to me, and one of the things that he used to say, when I'd say, oh my God, we're losing all this stuff, the artifacts are going all over the world, and he'd say, nothing can be lost. And if those artifacts end up somewhere else, there's enough. There's enough of Egypt with the same symbols. So it ends up in New York. Great. All the people in New York who aren't going to go to Egypt can see this material. Egypt left so many artifacts, and prolific in many, many ways, that there's enough to share with everybody. And no matter what you think, nothing actually can be lost. It can be hidden in plain sight. A photograph can reveal something, and the pieces can be put back together. Mm. And honestly, Lance, I sat there for years going, I wonder what he means by that. Because it sure looks lost to me.
Right.
And then
right.
Now that I've been around the block a few more times and I've seen the depth of the symbols and the repetition of the symbols, I'm prepared to agree with him.
Well, speaking of photographs, did you get any feedback from people on those amazing pictures you took of the pyramids with the odd things that showed up on your camera?
Well, I have hardly shown them to anyone. I did post them in a way that the listeners on Fireside Chat could access them, and I had them on my website, and if you signed up, you could see them. I've not shown them to people like William Henry, who are talking about plasma fields, and I've been keeping them pretty close. I'm actually a little nervous about exposing them too far and wide, because I'm telling you, I get so many emails, I almost can't handle it anymore. So,
well, that's understandable.
I haven't, posted the pictures of the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera.
Mm.
So, no, and I don't know what to say about them, but you know what else? You don't have to be able to explain it in order to have it shown. Like, you can see that it's obvious that it can't be lens flares because of the angles and that sort of thing, and there's they've been examined for that kind of thing. But, no, I can't explain them either.
Well, I'll just tell you that my first reaction was just complete shock and startle. So, and that only happens when something is beyond the visuals. It wasn't the visual; it was what it did to me that was so astounding. So,
well, and
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I've been on the phone with people while they go on their computer and look at them, and they're just like gasping, like, "Oh my God!"
Well,
people expect the same old. Oh, yeah. I've heard all about that. Like a lot of people, like the pyramid code, whatever. Yeah, I know all about that. Have you seen it? No. Well, they just expect the same facts to be regurgitated.
Oh, it is not.
I really don't want to be interviewed by anybody who hasn't seen it, because you would never guess what's in there.
Oh, no, you couldn't possibly. And when I was rewatching episodes 4 and 5 last night, it was like I was getting it all over again. And then, I thought, this is absolutely a masterpiece. it's a treasure. And anybody that doesn't avail themselves of that experience is really missing out something wonderful.
Well, a lot of people are watching it on YouTube, and I can't keep it off YouTube. Too many people upload it, and then you're looking at it teeny tiny and really poor quality. It is filmed in HD.
It's
and the most
so
common... Pardon?
It's so different on a big screen.
Oh yeah, and the most common comment is that people finish it and they watch it again and again and again, to the point where their kids are going, "Mom, why do you keep watching that same DVD?" But now it's going to be like, it's been encrypted, and it takes a long, long time to encrypt 5 hours of film.
Oh.
So that it can be on Netflix and pay to download, pay to view. And then you get the high-def version of it straight off the high-def tapes, which is even better quality than the DVDs, either PAL or NTSC, North America or Europe. And so that's new, and that's been a big deal, big contract thing, that it's coming out apparently March 4th. But pretty soon that'll be, so anybody can instantly, because they want to see it now, can see it in the highest quality.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I was wondering too if there was anything that you'd like to share with us tonight since we are in this acceleration, we're kind of in a nanoparticle of a second before it or in it. If there's anything you'd like to share with us tonight that might have practical applications as we go through these shifts, and maybe anything that might relate to your research with the pyramids and the Mayans and the rest of it, or just anything at all?
Well, what is becoming clearer to me is that we're all becoming more psychic, and the connection to Mother Gaia and the wisdom of the Earth is what will upgrade our DNA. So our DNA went from 12-strand down to 2-strand, and it's augmenting 2 to 3 to 6 to 9 to 12. And that's the way that it evolves. And the only way that we can get the hits is by being in nature and by being conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation is about coming back down to neutral. And people say, well, I can't meditate because I had a thought. But actually, when you have a thought, you've actually remembered to come back to center.
Uh-huh.
And people say, well, I don't know how to meditate. Well, my master's research simply indicated that there's no person that's better at it or worse at it or anything about practice.
Yeah.
And you're messing with your head and you're letting yourself float, or the minute you realize you float, you come back. So being in nature, meditating in nature is probably, you know, the combination of two. Yoga retreats on the beach, something that has you sitting, keeping your spine straight, clearing your mind, breathing fresh air and being on the earth, walking in the woods, letting the tops of trees comb your aura, and then, you know, putting yourself in water and, you know, breathing exercises, that sort of thing. Like, there's something about being in water, by water, away from electrostatic, anything, away from synthetics, keeping the house open to the extent that you can with fresh air coming in, if you can sleep with your window open. All of these things make a huge difference. If you're in a closed air, and I say closed brain circulation system, and you stay indoors, drive into your garage, you know, go to work, park underground, you spend the whole day in a building, you go across what we call plus 15s to the next building above above the road, you literally are cut off from Mother Earth. And from that's the Earth is making the transition. The solar system is going into the galactic core. And the dates aren't October 28th, 2011. It's sunset, the Great Pyramid, December 21st, 2012. The alignment is absolutely clear. We've been very close to that and circulating through. And so we've just got to keep ourselves in neutral to the extent that we can and build our communities. And it's been said that if we think the whole world's going to fall apart, how would we live? If the world fell apart, then start living that way now. If you have to walk everywhere because your car doesn't work, start walking.
Right.
If you're going to be planting seeds, where are they?
If you
need water, where is it?
Yeah.
And if you think you're going to end up being vegetarian, well, start.
Right.
And so that's really powerful. So if there is no internet, how do you spend your day?
That's a very good question. It's a very good question. And if the electrical grid goes down, that's, you know, one less interference pattern to take us away from being connected to everything.
The internet goes down as it did in Egypt in a nanosecond.
Oh, yeah.
What do you got? You've got telepathy, and you got yourself, and
that's
people
right.
that you can walk to. Well, internet, right. No, we haven't lost our cars, but that may happen, too. Pardon me, I've got something in my throat. I got too excited there, I guess.
One quick question that I'm not sure that you could address tonight, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I wanted to ask you when we were talking about the Gnostics, and I was just watching a program on that, and they seem to be pretty convinced that the negative influence was created here by the Archons. Do you have any thoughts on that, or intuition, or feelings about that? And
yep. Well, it's very interesting. I direct people to John Lamb Lash's work. There's a 37 part thing on YouTube called "Not in His Image." It took me a week to go through it. Very deep, very sophisticated. And thanks for that. I'm glad. Because it's, you know, we've been deep as mud puddles with 30-second sound bites, and we think we can understand everything in a few seconds, and it's too deep for that.
Yeah.
And so Jay Widener talks about it as well, and it's connected to the matriarchal feminine consciousness and all of that.
Yeah.
And the Archons were a byproduct of when Gaia Sophia presented herself, and the creativity created the Earth, and it sounds very mysterious, but basically... it's a phenomena that happened, and the Archons couldn't get in. And so it's almost like they're little greeblies, that, you know, ghostbusters that can't quite get in, and they're not really here, but they, you know, can do nasty and annoying things and make it look like certain things are happening, and they actually have no power, and so they puff themselves up like abusers, if you will, molesters, to make it sound like, you know, they're the king of the castle and everybody else, you know, has got to, you know, believe everything they say, when actually they have no power, which is why they have to puff themselves up so much. So they're supposed to be scheduled to be gone, and that's why I'm concerned about people being conscious and not just towing the party line with the collective unconscious and believing what everybody's saying when it may not be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have said, I've been saying this for 20 years, that when we come to the end of the Mayan calendar and the Mayan cycle, that this is a failed experiment, and it was a 5,000-year one, and that they've been the in their last kicks trying to puff themselves up and make themselves look even more important and angry, but because really their time is done. So if we all wake up and just don't buy it for a second, I'm not sure what will happen, and I'm not saying that, you know, all we have to do is smile and pray and, you know, the whole world will fix itself. I mean, we are in some very interesting times, and there's a big mess out there.
No kidding.
So I do think that there's a lot to the Archons, and they've been called many things, but it's almost, how are you going to prove what year the Anunnaki landed, and if there even are Anunnaki?
Mm-hmm.
And is it a legend, or... You know, the thing is that we, you know, some topics are a little bit more measurable, you know, we've got to choose our battles in terms of what we can prove, and then we've got to feel in our bodies about, you know, what we believe and what we don't. But if you're just listening to people out there without discerning inside yourself, oh, the Anunnaki are there, oh, they're blonde, no, they're the reptilians, no, they were never here, oh, yeah, they're here, no, they're not. Like, well, wait a minute. Who's going to prove who the Anunnaki are?
Right.
And, you know, we've got to really be careful here. But I think that the power of the evil and the negativity is scheduled to end. It doesn't look that way.
Yeah.
But it's my conviction that they're scheduled to vaporize.
Well, that's a very positive way to end this show. And you've often said, you know, actually on just about every show, that you feel that the... that as 2012 approaches, that we will begin to see a change, and we will begin to feel the change towards the light, or towards the direction of the golden age. So it's about seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and being able to put another foot forward out of the template of negativity and the rest of it that we've been talking about tonight.
Well, we need to be realistic and plan for a miracle.
And tie our camels.
Yeah, trust in God, but tie up your camel.
That's it. Carmen, this is just about the end of another show. I urge everybody to get your DVD, The Pyramid Code, and it can be found at www.pyramidcode.com, right?
Yes, and also everywhere, Amazon.com.
Oh, good, good,
good. Barnes &
Noble's
and everywhere. Wonderful. Everywhere in Europe as well, Australia.
Wow.
You can access it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming back again and sharing yourself with us all, and I look forward to our next Fireside Chat.
Thanks, Lance.
All right, have a nice evening.
You too. Good night.
All right. Good night, everybody.